Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you've been hearing, a part of the NYPD stop and frisk policy was ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge yesterday. The case involved a Bronx program called Clean Halls, where building managers asked the police to help prevent trespassing in privately owned apartment buildings. Joining me to talk about the ruling and what it might mean going forward is Michael Aronson, member of the editorial board of the Daily News. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
And your paper's editorial this morning, I know, is very critical of the judge's ruling, and we'll get to that. But first, let's go through some of the facts. What was this program, Clean Halls?
Well, it actually has been around for a long time, and it's a citywide program. I used to live in a building in Manhattan, and there was a big poster when you came in. It says, "We participate in Clean Halls." It's when a privately owned rental building, the landlord signs up with the police department, again, any part of the city, and what they do is they're basically inviting the police department to help patrol the building. So the police can come in, make sure only residents and their invited guests and people who are supposed to be there are inside the building. And it's part of this federal judge, Shira Shinlin, in Manhattan, has three lawsuits before her dealing with what people call stop and frisk, but what we call, we think more accurately, stop, question, and sometimes frisk.
Right.
We can get into that.
Right. But before we even get into the big picture of the three constitutionality lawsuits, in this case, a resident whose 17-year-old son was stopped while running an errand was the one who sued, right?
Right. There was a handful of people. They happened to all be in the Bronx. I think there were nine instances. Some of them might have involved more than one person, where they felt that they were not treated properly by the police, and almost all of these were outside of these private buildings, either entering the private building or leaving the private building. And, you know, there's testimony
Not treated properly in the sense of, and this is where the constitutional question comes in, stopped without cause.
Right. Why are you stopping me? And you're either holding me or giving me a ticket or arresting me. But it's the what is prompting the police officer to ask the person to stop, ask them some questions, maybe frisk them. And that was the testimony in the trial. It was all on paper. There were depositions and affidavits is from these nine instances and from the police officers involved in each one of these circumstances. So I don't have it in front of me. You know, complainant A says this happened on this date, but then police officer A says, no, it happened this way. So the judge evaluated these and gave apparently more credence to the complainants than the police.
On the point that these stops were based on hunches by the individual police officers, not any evidence of reasonable suspicion. That's the bottom line, right?
Right. There's a police officer can come up to you and say, "Hey, Brian, what's up?" And
mm-hmm.
you can say nothing or nice day. If he says, "What are you doing here?" you can say nothing, leave me alone. There's actually an old Court of Appeals decision from New York State establishes four levels of police scrutiny of someone they come across, you know, from, you know, nice weather and you can say, "Well, leave me alone," up to you're under arrest. And it's what's in the police officer's mind. Does the police officer have probable cause or reasonable suspicion? There are actually specific legal words in the court ruling which are supposed to be in the police officer's training manual.
Mm-hmm.
So when they come up to someone, they say, "Okay, the guy is, you know, there was a robbery around the corner, and this guy matches the description." That's much different than, "Hey, you know, it's late. What's this guy doing here?" And that some of these intrusions on someone's liberty the police officers give more latitude depending on the circumstances. And that's all part of the larger stop and frisk debate. As we mentioned before, there's three cases out there. One is police interaction with people on the streets, on public streets. That's actually going to trial, I think, in March. There was this Clean Halls program where landlords say, please patrol my building and check on my building. The judge dealt with that, but only for Bronx buildings because the complainants are all from the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
The third case is dealing with what's known as vertical patrol and police presence in public housing projects where, you know, 400,000 New Yorkers live in thousands of buildings around the city. And who's allowed to be on the property, in the buildings, in the courtyards, in the stairwells. That's also before this judge, Shira Shinlin. And we've taken the editorial position that, you know, the police are trying to abide by court rulings to protect people's liberties and also, you know, to take guns off the street and to, you know, take threats to the public. I mean, what's interesting is the landlords say we want these in our buildings. The Bronx Borough President, who's been one of the public officials very critical of, thinks the police are being too aggressive sometimes, yesterday said, no, no, we want to keep this Clean Halls program going because the landlords like it for the most part, and the tenants for the most part like it because it keeps their homes, in their minds, safer and more secure.
So I want to take a caller from the South Bronx who's already called in, who I think is conflicted about this. And listeners, if you're on either side of this with personal experience, maybe some police officers are listening who participated in the Clean Halls program, or if there's anybody with some experience being stopped.
Or if the judge wants to call in.
Judge Shinlin, where are you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And here is Jim in the South Bronx. Is it Jim?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you? I've been on both sides of this issue more than once. I've called into this program to talk about having been stopped but not frisked by the cops more than once in the South Bronx. I'm actually a middle-aged guy, but I'm tall, I'm black, I'm muscular. So in the eyes of some cops, I guess that makes me an automatic suspect. But at the same time, I'm actually the president of a small condo association in the South Bronx, 13 units. And I've gone to the 41st precinct here to enroll this building in the Clean Halls program because we had a resident here who was actually dealing drugs out of his mom's apartment on the first floor. I wound up not doing it because some of the residents were more suspicious of the police than of the drug dealing activity. They don't want their kids stopped. They don't want their visitors stopped for no reason by the police. So I know exactly what the issues are. On balance, even though I'm on both sides of it, on balance, I'm actually in favor of the ruling because stop and frisk is really out of hand. It's really, really out of hand. And even though I've had to deal with this issue of drug dealing in my own building, I think on balance, anything that can sort of like define and make more precise guidelines on these kinds of programs is a good thing.
Jim, thank you so much. And I always appreciate your calls with how open-minded you are and how you do see both sides of many, many issues. And you know, Michael Aronson, I think that really nicely encapsulates the conflictedness that probably many people in the Bronx and many people in high stop and frisk, which are high crime areas, experience.
Right. The goal, everyone would, I believe, would say, the goal is to make the streets or the buildings safer. You know, there are some bad guys out there who have knives, who have guns. And, you know, it may be part of the larger gun control debate. But there were a couple cases, actually in the Bronx, with different programs where police stopped a high school kid on the street who was supposed to be in school and started questioning him. The kid was, like, fidgety and kept, you know, kind of protecting his pocket. And the cop says, I'm gonna touch your pocket, and he tapped on the kid's pocket. Something was hard. He reached inside, and it was a loaded pistol. And the courts actually ruled, no, sorry, officer, that was not a proper search. And therefore, that evidence has to be suppressed. I mean, the gun was kept. And there, the police officer was doing exactly what Jim and Brian and Michael would hope he would be doing, keeping his eye out, you know, making sure things are safe. We don't want 15-year-olds walking around outside of school hours with loaded pistols in their pockets. And taking that gun off the street and getting that kid, you know, in trouble, we don't want him to have guns, is the right thing. What? But the judge says, no, the officer acted wrongly, which is a problem because we want the police. You know, we had a 400 or so murders, which is 400 too many, but vastly smaller than what it used to be. We want a safe place, and I think, as you're right, Jim said, I want to be safe, but I don't want to be hassled.
You point out another of the contradictions in the guns debate. Progressives see Mayor Bloomberg as a hero for wanting to crack down on guns nationally, but the local crackdown, when it's carried out as part of stop and frisk, makes them skeptical of him. We're almost out of time, but I just want to note that Bronx DA Robert Johnson had already decided not to prosecute these Clean Halls trespassing cases based just on the affidavit in this lawsuit because of what I guess he saw as either unconstitutional behavior or police misconduct. Here is DA Robert Johnson speaking to WNYC's Amy Eddings yesterday.
Since this change of policy, there have been fewer cases coming into our complaint room, which means I think that they are taking great pains to ensure that they are doing it according to the regulations. And that's actually what the ruling by Judge Shilin today is directing the police department. I don't know whether the city and the police department are going to appeal this, but it's directing things like further training and further instruction on just how to do it the proper way.
So that's interesting to me, Michael, and we just have 30 seconds left, because DA Johnson, as a skeptic of the program, seems to say that they're starting to do it in a better way on the basis of the lawsuit itself. Now it's been struck down altogether. How does this set up the other two cases? In other words, do you read Judge Shinlin's ruling as setting up for striking down all of stop and frisk as unconstitutional because so many innocent people get stopped all over the city?
I think, and we may take the other position, you know, fearfully, that this is telegraphing her stand on the other cases. And, you know, she'd made some comments earlier on the bench, and this is kind of in line with her actions and her pronouncements. You know, ultimately, it's not going to be decided by her alone. The city's going to appeal and go up to the next level. But the ruling actually says the police are stopped from making unconstitutional stops outside these buildings. The police would say any stop we make is constitutional. So, you know, the police, Kelly and those, they don't want to make illegal stops. They want to make legitimate stops. And, you know, I don't know what happened with Jim, if those stops were warranted or were unwarranted. But, you know, it's the definition of what stop is warranted. There will always be some stops. And we don't want an unnecessary person hassled. But, you know, the judge isn't out there. It's the patrolman. And he's not going to have his 157-page ruling to carry around in his back pocket to say, well, do I check this person? Right. Is this person a risk to me, to the community, or do I let him go? I mean, it's a tough job the cops have. We want them to do it well and also to protect people's liberties.
And it's a tough question the court has when if 90% of the people who are being stopped turn out to not be doing anything at all wrong, does that mean there's a pattern of unconstitutional stops? And I guess Judge Shinlin will rule on that one of these days. Michael Aronson from the Daily News editorial board, skeptical of the judge's ruling in this stop and frisk case. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Bye-bye.
And we're going to check in briefly with WNYC's Richard Hake, who's following that awful ferry crash in Manhattan this morning. Hi, Richard. What's the latest?
Hey, Brian. Well, yes, around 8:45 this morning, a Sea Streak Wall Street catamaran coming from Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, apparently banged into the mooring as it arrived, creating about a 6-foot gash in the forward portion of the vessel. The police and fire officials now saying 30 to 50 people were hurt during this crash. It's not known how many people are critically injured, but at least 50 people being evaluated. We can see from the television helicopter shots people lined up on stretchers on the pier, actually, with blankets around them. Of course, that's because of the cold. It does look a little ominous when you look at those helicopter shots, but that's because of perhaps shock, and it is a bit chilly out there. We do have some tape here. A 39-year-old Roy Marceau of Rumson, New Jersey, he was on the boat coming into Manhattan, and he said there was no warning before it crashed.
It was a pretty good jolt. There's a lot of people that were cut, banged up, in pain.
And, Brian, this was just coming in. It was just about to dock, so you can imagine when that happens, most people get up from the seats. They wait in those stairwells. They wait for the ferry to actually arrive at the pier, and when it did, many of them fell down steps. There were broken windows. There were probably some injuries there.
The AP is reporting that at least one person has what they describe as a critical head injury. And national cable TV news has picked up this story. All of America is seeing this ferry crash now because of that striking image of, I don't know exactly how many people being laid out on their backs on the dock, on the pier, after they were taken off the boat. And it looks like they're all on stretchers and there are so many serious injuries. I don't know if that's an illusion just because of what they had to do to move them, but it makes some picture.
Absolutely. And this ferry does hold up to 400 people. We hear reports of about 350 people were on board this ferry at the time. And our data news department here at WNYC went to the Coast Guard incident reports and found that Wall Street, this specific ferry has been involved in at least two prior docking accidents. In January of 2010, the boat hit a cluster of fender piles at the Sandy Hook Bay Marina while docking. That punched a hole through the skin of the ship above the waterline. Mm. And then in August of 2009, the ferry suffered a 2 to 3 foot tear in the bow. Wow. Above the waterline at East 34th Street. And that's because the ship's controls became unresponsive. But nobody was hurt in either one of those incidents.
More good reporting from our data news team. Were they able to find if the ferry captain was the same person in either of those cases?
We haven't found that out yet, but that would be an interesting question.
WNYC's Richard Hake, thanks for the update.
Thanks, Brian.
And coming up next, we'll get an update on the self-immolations in Tibet. Why are so many people killing themselves to protest Chinese rule?